Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us this morning. So even though this is our usual Sunday morning meditation and talk, it also coincides with the final day of a retreat that began Thursday night. We've had approximately, I think, about 60 members, a third of them here in residence, and two-thirds online. Retreating from the world, so to speak, to focus singularly on one very important topic, and the topic of retreat is learning how to love. You know, there's a great literature of learning. You know, learning how to install a toilet, and learning how to, you know, all kind, you know, learning how to fix your car. So, you know, all kinds of learnings that go on, all kinds of how-to. Learning how to love, this whole literature of how to. But there's something, again, and even in terms of our own transformation, you know, learning to be more patient, learning how to be less angry, right? Oh, there's so many things, learning how to be more mindful in my life. There's so many things that we are learning. But there's something about learning how to love, which kind of dominates them all. Right. Especially, I think, in our culture. I mean, our culture, you know, isn't that one of the prime purposes of one's life, right? To find somebody to love me. To find somebody to love, right? I'm sort of out of it these days, but isn't that kind of the essence of popular culture, popular music, right? Is music still all about? I mean, in my day, it was all about what? Finding your love, falling in love, being in love, falling out of love, being angry at the one you used to love, being disappointed, being hurt, looking again. Finding love, I mean, is that still what a lot of the songs are about? I mean, nothing's changed. So that should be, I mean, that's indicative of something. So, I mean, it's not just, I mean, just to continue on that vein, again, I haven't looked at popular celebrity magazines, but aren't they all about who's in love with who? Who's not in love with who? How's the relationship going between, you know, the love relationship? I mean, it's you know, movies, TV, you know, it's all love, love, love. As well as I said earlier, I think that's one of the primary, if people think, you know, what is the primary thing that I want to do in life? Well, you know, for most people, they want to what? They want to earn a living, have a career, right? And then they also want to what? Find love. So, you know, love is not just another thing, right? It is, I think, at the center of at least the modern, I'll say the American experience. And I think so much of our issues in life, you know, when people have issues, you know, people have issues. What do they have issues with? Right? Well, yeah, relationships. They didn't get enough love in their childhood, right? Or they got a certain kind of love that was, you know, they feel was injurious to them. You know, so this, the centrality of love the searching for love, the looking for love, the needing love, the wanting love, again, I think is the central energy of the American experience, as well as it is the probably the essential, or one of the essentials pain, essential pains of the human experience. People get hurt in love, they get disappointed in love. So much anger, violence even in our culture between people is some of the worst violence in our culture goes on between people who are supposed to be in love or used to be in love. Right. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, learning how to love is not just another how-to. It is, I think, central to the human experience, as well as both in terms of happiness. I mean, why do we search for love? Why do we want love? Why do we want a loving partner? Because we think it's the path to what? To happiness, to wholeness, to feeling good. Right? And at the same time, the disappointment in love, the losing love, the being frustrated in life, being hurt in love, is on the other side, you know, the greatest, one of the greatest sufferings that people experience. So it is because of that that, you know, we do these retreats, we do these intensives on love. You know, one of the things, the problems with doing a retreat on love, you know, if I do a retreat on this aspect of the Buddha's teaching or that aspect of the Buddha's teaching or Buddhist psychology, because, you know, Buddhism is new to our culture, most people don't have a lot of baggage. Most people don't have a lot of references. Right? So when you give them Buddhist teachings, it's kind of like new territory, new way of looking at things, right? But when it comes to love, since it has been so central in all of our lives, very personally, interpersonally, we have a lot of baggage. I'm being nice now. We have a lot of baggage. Love, which means we have all kinds of ideas about what love is and what love isn't, and what love should be and what it shouldn't be, and how you know when you're in love and how you know when you're out of love. You're right? You see what I'm saying? There's not a lot of purity in it. There's not a lot of openness, even though we think there is. So again, you know, what I said to the group when we assembled in the beginning, you know, I acknowledged that, you know, and this was, you know, a fairly experienced group of members. And it was very clear that, you know, learning how to love was not, you know, this was not new for people. People had been dealing with this issue for, since adolescence, maybe, you know, and because of the kind of people we are in our community, people are kind of working on themselves. So people have read lots of books on love, and they've listened to lots of podcasts on love, and they've been to retreats on love and workshops on love and love, 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 right? I mean, been in therapy for love and around love and relationships. So, I mean, and yet, here we are, right? So why is it with all that learning and all that intentionality and all those, you know, desire to change, you know, why are we here once again? And I'll go into that, but I, you know, one of the things I said to people on the day one, after having them got to acknowledge that they're all experts in love and yet have not been able to implement it really in their life, is forget it all. Just forget everything you ever knew about love, thought about love. Okay, just be totally open and be blank, right? Because the problem, I think, up to now is, you know, we've built this ability to learn how to love on basically a very faulty. You know, it's sort of like at a certain point when you're trying to repair something, you know, you keep making repairs to something, you keep making changes to something. At a certain point, you realize that all the changes and repair I'm making are all in the context of what the thing is. But maybe the thing itself isn't worth keeping. You see? You know, sometimes when I'm working on an idea or something, I'll put something out, and then I'll work it and work it, and then I'll work it and work it, and it just doesn't seem right. At a certain point, I go, just throw it away and start over. Right? It's just because we're endlessly tweaking. You see, we're endlessly tweaking something that is fundamentally misguided. Right? You see? We're always trying to improve something that, you know, really can't be improved because the structure that we've built it on, which is faulty learning, faulty experience, right? You know, most of us did not grow up in a context of life that was totally 100% healthy. Is that true? Right. I mean, you know, we did not grow up with people that 100% were loving with each other, knew how to 100% nurture love with us, were great models of it, exemplars of it, you know what I mean? In that sense, you know, there's a lot of good stuff to build on. But many of us, and again, this is not to blame anybody, because everybody's product of their causes and conditions, you know, poor experiences, poor modeling, inconsistent, you know, all that. I don't need to go into it, right? And so it's that basic, you know, flawed structure of our learning and experience about love, conscious and unconscious, that we're always trying to work with. You see? And it's unworkable. And that's why we're here, because it doesn't get us to where we want to go, right? And so my suggestion to people was, in this matter, why don't we just put it aside, be totally fresh. And then step one, you know, what are the Buddhist teachings on love? Right? Let's just learn, let's just be open and see there may be another whole way to go at this love thing, which is so essential, right? And it's very different. Because the Buddha called, I think, what passes for love in our culture, which is probably more around romantic love, he called that suffering. Why? Because it is based on attachment. It is based on need, right? Neediness. It's based on looking outside ourselves for the solution to a problem that's inside us. Therefore, it'll never work. Can you see that? Because our neediness, our woundedness around love, our feelings of our own unlovability, you know, unworthiness, you know, not feeling whole, those are internal experiences, right? And you can't solve an internal experience out there. You only solve it in here, where the problem is, you see. So it's not like, you know, romantic relationships and these kinds of relationships aren't just part of the human, you know, experience. But it's this believing that somehow if I find the right person, if I find the right relationship, then everything will be wonderful. Anybody know about that one? Right? That is a setup. A setup for what? Yeah, disappointment. frustration, anger, hurt, you know, all that stuff that comes up, right? Because that other person will never give us what we want, because the problem is in here, as well as they have their stuff. Right? They have their stuff. That doesn't mean we can't create loving, harmonious relations with people, but it's this inner need. So the Buddha's teaching is not about, you know, how do I get love? It's how do I cultivate and generate love from within? How do I become a loving person, a kind person, a compassionate person, a happy person? You see, how do I learn how to generate these qualities within myself? It's called the four measurables. How do I learn to generate it in myself? You see, if I can generate it in myself, I have it. I don't need it. I don't need it from the outside. Right? Is that clear? See, I don't need it from the outside. To be needy is to put yourself in a very, what? Vulnerable situation. And that's why people, I don't want to go to that love thing. It makes me feel vulnerable. Right? You know, people talk this way. But what does that really mean? It's that needy love, that clinging love, right? That's what we're afraid, you know, and you have a good right to be afraid. Because you can't depend on other people to be the ideal that you want. Right? I mean, that's a setup, if there ever was one. So fundamentally, the Buddha's teachings on love, you know, loving kindness, compassion, joy and the joy of others. And then the fourth part is equanimity, which is, you know, our capacity to love. We have such a narrow purview. You know, we think if I can only find one person, and then maybe we can make a little family together, and we can all be loving together, and, you know, maybe I'll extend it to a few close friends, and, you know, you see how it's very tiny. The Buddha's love is immeasurable. You know, it's like, how do I cultivate a love and a compassion that is like the sun? It just radiates toward everyone, right? So this equanimity, equality is very much part of the Buddha's teachings on love, right? It's something I want to learn to do in all my relationships, in all my connections with everyone I encounter, with the world, you know, with animals, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, loving kindness toward all beings, right? Compassion for all beings who suffer. I mean, that's everyone, isn't it? And it cuts across all the barriers that we erect between me and you, between my family and your family, between my religion and your religion, and my country and your country, and my ethnic background and your ethnic background. You see, all the ways this kind of love cuts through all that. We're all, you know, part of the Buddha's teachings is, everyone is just like me. Just like me. Right? Nobody wants to suffer. Everybody wants to be happy. I mean, that's universal. And that cuts through all the ways we divide each other from each other when we see the universality of this fundamental human experience. Right? We want to be happy, at peace. We want to be free of suffering. Right? So we want to understand that the cultivation of these four measurables is kind of an ongoing, it's a flow that never has to stop, you see. That's why it's something that we learn to cultivate. And that's what, you know, we spend a lot of time in this retreat. I mean, the first day was spent on learning and then how to actually practices to do it. You know, another very difficult part of this, beside the other things I mentioned, is in Buddhist love, there's no quid pro quo. Right? There's no payoff. There's nothing I want. I give my love, I give my compassion freely. But most of us, we live, you know, like it's a, you know, it's a transaction, right? I'll give you my love, but you have to do this, this, and this. I'll give you my love, but you have to be like this, this, and this. Right. And so that's in Buddhism, that's not love. That's not real love. That's a wounded love. That's a narrow love. Now, again, we have to begin somewhere. I mean, it's not like, you know, but it's there's something much greater than that. Right? You know, that quid pro quo, that's always, you know, watching, right? Being very loving to them, the least they could do is what? Right? You see, we're always manipulating. That's the world of self. It's always watching out for itself. It doesn't like to do things freely. Right? It always wants to get something back. Right? The least they could tell me is, gee, you're really quite a loving person these days. Oh. See, that, at least they could say that, right? You know, at the very least. Yeah, so, you know, that was a lot of the retreat. And then another whole part of the retreat, of course, was blockages, you know? So why is it, even if we learn these practices, these teachings, why don't they just flow? And again, that's, you know, what are the impediments? What are the things that prevent me from just entering freely into this way of loving and being? You know, what holds me back? So we spent some time really hearing from people and looking deeply and reflecting, you know, what are the impediments in me? Again, some of them are very unconscious. It's you know, early learning, you know, family, situations, life, you know, things that happen. You know, we didn't have good models, or, you know, we really didn't receive unconditional love. It was always parceled out, right? Or else we've been wounded in love. You know what I mean? All kinds of things that have that prevent us from going into the world, as a loving person. You know, of course, the other thing is what we just talked about is, you know, the world of self. The world of self is only concerned about me. Right? And it sees everyone out there as just objects to fulfill my needs. You know, very dangerous, right? You know, so the ego is always, self is always scanning. You know, what's in this for me? What can I get from this person? How can I keep this person? How can I control this person? How can I manipulate this person, you know, to give me what I think I want? Very busy. So again, all these things, you know, are contaminations. Once all that is clear, you know, what also gets in our way, and this is sort of a review for people on retreat. The other thing, which is so profound, is and so simple, is we don't have a conscious, clear aspiration, commitment to show up in the world as a loving, compassionate person. We maybe have a general, a general aspiration, but on a day-to-day level, on a moment-to-moment level, on a human encounter level that are going on all day, that is not what's in our mind. And so this capacity to implement in our daily life what we say we like, most people would say, yeah. you know, I'd like to be more loving. Yeah, sounds good. You know, I'd like to be more compassionate. Sounds good. I'd like to be more open, less defended, more relaxed around people and caring. And yeah, that sounds great. You know, I'm in for that. And that's it. That's it. And then we just go through our day. And the problem is, as I point out all the time, is the way we have done things has its own energy. It does not need any consciousness. Right? So as long as we're on autopilot, we will continue to do things the way we've always done it. And there's no way around that. If we want to change, change unfortunately takes consciousness, takes awareness, takes intention, right? Takes a certain kind of discipline, right? You know, and we know that, you know, if you want to learn any new skill, you know, work, craft, sports, I mean, you know, whatever you want to learn, you have to what? If you want to get good at it, you have to practice, and you have to be very intentional, and you have to know that's what I want to do, and you have to devote time to it, and it has to be in your mind, and you have to make choices, you know, to always be working it if you want to get good at it. So if we want to get good at being a loving person, a compassionate person, a happy person, unfortunately, we're going to have to work at it. You know, it'd be nice to say you can just take a pill. But it doesn't work that way. So to get anything deeper than, and that's one of the things we talked about, that a lot of our learning about love, our new learning about love is intellectual. We've read it from books, we've heard talks, it's all up here. But our deeper experiential learning about love, which is often, not good learning, it's kind of poor learning, that's deep because it happened early on, you see. And so to offset that kind of conditioned way we have of being in the world, right, especially in this area of relationships, you see, we have to work at it. And so there's got to be conscious intention, there's got to be an implementation plan, you know. I mean, that's kind of where we went in the retreat. Like, you know, when you leave here today, there are going to be 60 people, you know, set forth out in the world. If you're not conscious of what you're doing and how you want to change, you will, within a few days, couple of weeks, you'll be back, you know, responding the way you always did. Because that's the way you know. That's your default. So that's kind of what we've been up to. What I wanted to do, and then I'll take questions, is I've asked three people who are here in the hall for retreat if they would share their experience. And I'm doing this because I think for people who weren't on retreat and also for other people on retreat, it's just interesting that we learn from one another. And so I've asked someone who is brand new to our community, brand new to our community, brand new to me, and you know, first time on retreat. I've had somebody who's sort of new to us, but has been here a little while, and then somebody who's been around a while, just to kind of share their experience, around 5 minutes, you know, just what the retreat's been like for them, what was their experience, what they learned, what they got out of it, what were their challenges, just to kind of give us a little... These are sort of like, what are they, you know, on the news? What are they, kind of like human interest stories? What'd you call it? So, a sneak peek, oh, okay. I felt like a human interest story, you know. So if they would come up, and then do we have a mic? Okay, so why don't we begin with Todd, since Todd is the newest. And Todd, maybe, and Annie and Libby, maybe just introduce yourself, you know, just a little who you are, what you do, where you live. Just briefly. Still doing COVID protocols in the hall if you're wondering what's going on.
Hi, my name is Todd Gore, and I live.
Hi, my name is still Todd Gore, and I live in Claremont. And for a few years, I've been what I would call a dabbler at mindfulness with things that I could just pick up on my own. I recently found out about the community here and became very interested, and then recently joined. And I was very anxious to get inundated with it and do something like a retreat. My dabbling had not really gotten me where I had, was hoping to get. And a couple of things, initially just about the retreat itself. It's been a great experience all the way around. The Great Cloud facility is a wonderful place, very comfortable. All of that really worked very well for me. Just the way the attention to everything, I think, was very well done and enabled me anyway to be able to really focus on what I was here for, which was great. The food was wonderful. I don't know if Brian is here, but I don't eat a vegan life. I occasionally have a vegan meal with my son, and he'll be thrilled that I actually spent several days eating just vegan. But it was great. And a little side note, I may even feel a little better. And so, maybe that will incentivize me to go more in that direction. I don't know. I'm not going to commit to that at this point. But I did, get a lot out of being here. And so the whole, being inundated with it, the silentness of it was interesting. Having never been to a retreat of this kind or any kind of a retreat like this, it was very strange to not talk. I've been to lots of technical and other business adult education weeks, and there's a lot of talking, and it's constant talking. The mix of Dharma talk and meditation I think what was for me anyway a very good mix as far as the amount of Dharma talk was balanced well with meditation that gave me the ability to reflect well on what was being said and how that applies to me, how I can apply it so that I can, as Fred was saying, be able to action on that when I go home. Because that's, why I'm here. It was fun being here, but, I'm here so that I can take something home and make changes in myself. So the overall experience has been very positive for me. I don't know if I'm out of my time. But great. I didn't know if I had enough time. So I learned quite a bit about myself. I thought that I had overcome things like acceptance. I said, "Well, I'm a very accepting person," but when I really looked at it, I'm accepting on a very specific basis, or I have been. I'm accepting if these conditions are true, then I'm very accepting. But when they're not, then sometimes I'm not. I hadn't really realized the extent to which that applied to myself, that not only am I not that accepting as I thought in my relationships with those close to me, I haven't been as accepting of loving myself as I assumed maybe that I was. And so the teachings and the focus enabled me to see that in a much better way, and make me, you know, able to take that forward from this point. So there's a whole lot that I got out of this that it will take me quite a while to unpack and go through, hopefully in a which I also got from being here, in a little slower, more intentional, more conscious way than I might have 4 years ago or 5 years ago at a technical class. So thank you.
I'm Annie. I'm from up the road, Lutz, and I signed up for this intensive. This is my first in-person intensive. I've been to several online intensives, and then the first night, Angie read what the whole intensive was, and I'm like, oh, I don't know about the other stuff. But I signed up for this because I wanted to learn how to love people I don't like. And then I come to find out that I'm the problem. So I'm like, oh, we're back to that again. So, and just the information that Fred gave me was just awesome and practical. And I can write it down, I can use it. And the facility, like being online is helpful, but being here with all of you is so beneficial to me. I just can feel it in my brain when we're all meditating. And the one other thing was, I was talking to my friend and I said, you know, I really want to go to an in-person retreat during COVID. And there were no in-person retreats. And we're like, how can you just be silent for so long? You know, and it was so easy to be silent. And it was just so beneficial. So that's it. Thanks.
Good morning. Bow to all of you online as well in the hall. My name is Libby Dunn, and I live in Gainesville, Florida. I'm retired. I used to be a social scientist once upon a time. And I think I'm trying to add up in my mind, but I think it's getting close to 7 years that I've been a member of FCM. And I probably have been on at least two retreats a year, at least. So, you know, a dozen retreats or more. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about what I like about retreat, what's wonderful about retreat. And if you haven't gone, you'll want to. Unlike Annie, I started off with lots of resistance when I first came to retreat. And it used to be every night, every time on like the first night I was there, I'm like, why am I here? I need to go home. You know, that doesn't happen anymore. The first time I went on retreat, I snuck my phone into my room and I texted my family good night. That doesn't happen anymore. And even I had my phone, but I never turned it on the whole time, except to see the time. You know, that's a change. And also silence, being silent around and being with a big group of people. You know, I was uncomfortable, especially just being around people. It's like thinking, you know, just, but that's not true anymore. I'm very comfortable being around everybody. And in fact, well, I'll get to that in a minute. It helps us a great deal. I did do some retreats online, and all of these things hold for retreats online as well. Fred always starts off by asking us to put up some barriers to the past and the future, which to me is incredibly helpful, not to think about whatever. Because your mind has to be totally on what you're doing. And that's why you come to retreat. The whole schedule is arranged so that, you know, all of these pieces complement each other. And also they build over time. So when you show up, you know, you're showing up with your regular mind. When you leave, you know, your mind has settled. Your mind has settled a great deal. I want to say something specifically about this retreat. It was on the four immeasurables, and not the first time I've heard about them. I've read a book or two. I was in an intensive once upon a time, and now I'm back in the intensive, so I can learn about it better. But this retreat is very fresh, a very fresh way to look at this. And Fred asked us to do that. He asked us to open up a space for something new in our minds. And then also, you know, encouraged us to try new things and to forget everything we knew and be willing to listen and try these new things. So I took more notes on this retreat than I think I have in other retreats. And it was all practical stuff. What can I do? Do this, do this, do this. And I got a lot of that from the other retreatants, you know, listening to them. We have one time a day when we share what's going on with us. And so hearing the other retreatants tell me what they were going to do, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to do that. Big thing I learned is that it's, as much as I'd like it to, it's not just going to happen. Developing this heart, this true heart of love, because I'm a nice person. I really am. I've been a nice person for a long time. But I'm not that kind of nice. And I'd like to be. I've wanted to be here for several years, but it doesn't just happen. And so, you know, going to retreat and being in that container of retreat gives us a taste of what it can be like. Because during those 3 days, I was surrounded by people who were practicing the same thing I was, thinking the same things I was thinking about. And I, you know, you feel so much encouragement to go deeper, to go further. And I just want to close with one thing about people on retreat. They heard me already about work meditation. And just, that's one of the things we do in our schedule. We have work meditation. And I did this with online retreat as well. And I found it to be the same. Whether I'm here or an online retreat, that work is just so different than the way I normally work at home. And so I might just put it in my schedule, you know. This is my work. There's a big difference. It's work meditation is fun. I mean, you're just right with the job. You're not really worried about, I've finally gotten over, you know, worrying about what other people might think, how well I'm doing the job or not doing the, I did in the beginning. I'm like, oh, am I doing this right? But now it's like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do what I can. And when the bell rings, I'm done. And I stay mindful the whole time. Stay mindful. And not only that, but because you're staying mindful and because you're thinking about all this material, it can start to kind of come up. And so my job was to wash breakfast dishes, breakfast and lunch dishes. And I was washing the oatmeal pot yesterday, and I was so happy. I was like, oh, I love washing this pot. All these people are studying so hard. I hope this oatmeal gave them the energy they needed to at least have some insights, you know. And I felt so happy. And then all of a sudden I thought, well, why don't I feel this happy washing dishes at home? And it's because of not learning how to practice these four immeasurables. I think that was an example of mudita, perhaps. Great joy that others could be nourished and could have insights. And so I guess that's what I learned. Fred.
I'd like to open it up. People in the hall, we have a microphone. People at home can just chat your question in. But as I said, this is, you know, there are many topics where we, you know, in Buddhism we may not have much experience in or opinions about. But love, you know, this is something we all know, right? How many times in your life have you said, I love you to somebody? Or love you? How many times have you heard people say, I love you? You know, from, we probably can't remember when we were infants, but, you know, we've been using those words, you know, as long as we've been alive. So, you know, what, you know, really, what is love? What really is love? And is there a love that does not create suffering? See, this is the Buddha's teaching was always about the end of suffering. It's about cultivating ways of being in the world, thinking, acting, etc., that don't create suffering and create the opposite, create wholeness, create goodness. And so his teachings on love spoke directly to that fundamental human experience. You know, and how can we approach love? How can we create loving relationships that are not a source of suffering? Right? That's the key piece, key challenge for all of us. And somebody wrote me, and I read it at a retreat, you know, falling in love is easy, but creating, maintaining a loving relationship, that takes effort, that takes work. So good. Any questions about anything? Yes. And again, in the hall, and then at home, just chat it in. Or if you have something more involved, they can just unmute themselves. No, they can't. Okay, they got to chat it in. What? Yeah, whichever's easier. Okay. Yes.
Nicholas bowing in.
Yes, Nicholas.
So speaking about work meditation, what mm-hmm. we've been doing this retreat, mm-hmm. our work meditation here has been physical. It's been washing dishes, things of mm-hmm. that nature, which is simpler to practice with to bring that loving nature to.
Yeah.
Most, not all, but for me, my experience at least, a lot of my work is cerebral. That's how I make my living for 8-9 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Do you have any words of, is it simply further practice to bring it to that cerebral type of work? Mm-hmm. Similar, just more, or is there a different perspective I could take to help bring that loving aspect to my day-to-day career?
Yeah, so that's a very good point. Now, obviously, there's a reason. I mean, you know, within our community and the activities, there's, you know, a lot of people do work, you know, which, you know, make creating programs and, you know, all that stuff. But we don't do any of that on retreat, right? So there's a reason, just the point you make, that doing manual work, you know, is much, much easier in terms of maintaining concentration, right? And it's very simple. So the one thing I would say to you before we get into your actual work is, Nicholas, if you are spending a lot of your day doing cerebral work, please learn to enjoy your non-cerebral work. Okay? I mean, so again, you know, what is that? Oh, like cleaning the house, you know? Right? See, most of us, we go, oh, one thing I don't like to do is clean the house, right? You see? Cleaning the house is manual labor. Right? It's good non-conceptual work, right? Do you prepare food at all? Yeah, so, you know, very mindful, just like in the kitchen downstairs, very mindful, very present. Enjoy the preparation, enjoy the eating of the food, enjoy the washing up. Again, takes no thought, does it, any of those things. And there are other activities that you're involved in during the day beside work, you know, going for walks, listening to music, you know what I mean? There are non-cerebral things that, you know, it's very important because, again, you're not alone, especially I think if you're a generation where more and more people are doing these kind of works, is what do they do when their 8 or 10 hours of cerebral work is over? They what?
distract themselves or keep thinking about.
Yeah, or else get onto this and get onto that and start listening to this and start surfing, you know what I'm saying? So basically what you're doing is just keeping that stimulation going, right? Rather than going, oh, enough of that, right? You see, so we have to be very conscious in how we use our downtime, because if you're stimulated in your work, and then at night you're, you know, doing this and texting and whatever, you know what I'm saying, and watching, you know what I mean, and you're keeping the stimulation going, then you wonder why it feels like, you know, there's no end to it. You see, stimulation all day, a lot of people have trouble falling asleep, you know, because the mind is so stimulated. You wake up in the morning, and right away you're what? Thinking about your work, what you got to do. You see, so that's very destructive overall. So it's very important that we put barriers, especially these days. Okay. So what exactly do you do? I mean, I'm sure I won't understand it, but I mean, in one sentence, you do what?
I audit IT systems.
Okay. And why do you, so is there any benefit from doing that to anybody?
Making the companies safer, their information.
Okay. So you see what I'm getting at? So you're saying what I do is beneficial. It's keeping the company safe. It's keeping the people who work there employed. Okay? So you can have an altruistic aspiration for the work you do. If you have in your mind, you know, I'm not doing this just to get a paycheck, you know, it's not like you're not, you know what I mean? But that's not what, you know, and I'm not doing this just for, you know, applause and all that. I'm doing this because I want to be of benefit. And so to have that inspiration, you can have it even in your cerebral work. Now, you know, in terms of work, the fundamental Zen thing is one thing at a time. One thing at a time. Okay? You do this, when that's done, you do that. When that's done, you do that. When that's done, you do that. Or just simply, just this. Okay? Now, oftentimes we don't work that way. We're doing this, but we're thinking about that. And we're worried about that. And we're concerned about, you see what I'm saying? And we're, so can you see how you're piling it up on yourself? So we have to kind of separate, which is very important, the actual doing from all the mental stuff that I put on it, okay? Because I would imagine what you're doing takes a lot of attention, right? And it's just this. You're very focused, right? Whatever the problem is, whatever the auditing you're doing, right? You're very focused on it. And if you enter your work in with that kind of presence and attention, have you ever heard me talk about concentration? That sounds familiar to you.
Yes, it does.
All right. That's what we're talking about, right? Your work, you know, make your work into your meditation, which means you're very singularly concentrated on each thing you're doing, right? Just like in meditation. When we're meditating, we're just meditating on our meditative practice. We're not thinking about this and remembering about that. And okay, so when you start approaching your work that way, and you don't pile it up, you don't get distracted, and then again, people add all these other pieces, you know, stress, they get anxious, they get worried, deadlines, am I going to meet it, what people think of me, you know what I mean? So a lot of times when people say, oh, my work is very difficult, it's really not the work. It's all the extra stuff that we pile onto the work, the emotional stuff, the expectations. Do you see what I'm saying? So if you can begin to parse that out to really see, you know, like if I, you know, just you watch, you know, what actually am I doing all day? And where is my mind when I'm doing all that? And you might find out that whatever stress or agitation you're feeling is not coming from the work. Because the work is just what? First this, then this, try this. That doesn't work, try that. I mean, isn't that what you're doing?
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of simple, isn't it, when you put it that way? Keep it simple. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions about? Yes, Angie?
We have two questions online.
Mm-hmm.
The first I'll read, and the second we will invite her to.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing love to your day, today encounters, mm-hmm. feels like it just reaches a small amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
How can it really make a difference in the world?
Yeah, so the question is, you know, wasn't there a song, We Are the World? We are the world. I mean, each one of us are part of the world, right? When you bring loving kindness, compassion to one human being, you're bringing loving compassion into the world, right? That's all we need to know, right? You see, we want outcome, you see? Yeah, I'd like to give my love, but I really want to give it to everyone. You can't give it to everyone. Can you? No. I mean, there's 8 billion people in the world. But you know, if you give love and compassion and presence and understanding to everybody you meet, everybody you encounter, I mean, you know, not just, you know, the people you live with or your family, you know, everybody you encounter when you go into a store and you know, everybody you encounter in the street, you know, you meet them with presence and caring, and you let them know you see them and you care about them. How are you? When you say that, you really mean it. You want to know how they are, right? You know, you have time to connect with people. You know, that can make a difference. So you do that, let's say you go through your day, you do that with 10 people. Well, maybe that's affected them, you see, and maybe they're interacting with some people, and it's a ripple, right? No, that may be, we're all different. Some of us have small universes that we interact in, right? Some people have much larger, you know, interactions, much larger networks, you know, where they can affect that kind of, you know. But love is very personal. Love is connection, you know? So we have to kind of, you know, many of us, we want to give love to the whole world, but we have trouble giving love to the people we live with. We have trouble giving love to the people we disagree with. We have trouble giving love and understanding and compassion to the people we don't like, you see. There's the challenge in learning how to love. So, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh, right? You know, peace begins with me. I mean, that was his great revolutionary statement, right? Yeah, you want to bring peace to the world, wonderful. First step, become a peaceful person, right? You want a world of where everybody loves one another. Well, learn how to love everybody in your life, right? You see, I mean, it's like, you know, we have all these great ideas, you know? But we want to bring it into life, you know, right? You want a world where people treat each other kindly and with respect, non-judgmental. Do that with everybody you encounter, right? If you have the ability, because of your position in life, to affect more people, well, do your best to do that. But, you know, if we overreach, then we get frustrated. Well, you know, if I can't give love to the whole world and change the whole world, then what's the use? You see, that's a very defeatist kind of thinking. The world is, you know, why is the world the mess it's in? I mean, the Buddha taught, you know, 2,600 years ago. I mean, didn't Jesus say anything about love? Right? I mean, you know, I mean, didn't all the great teachers talk about love and how we should treat each other? Right? How come we don't? Well, because we don't practice. So this is the great missing piece, you see? And that's, I think, one of the great teachings about Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, if this is the world we want, become that person. Cultivate it within yourself. You know, take the take the anger out of your own heart first. Learn how to love, you know, love thine enemies as thyself. I mean, you know, there it is. But do it. How do you do it? You got to practice. It's not easy, right? And if more people practice, then the world begins to change. The world does not change by ideology, right? I mean, the world, we've had romances with ideology and beliefs and ideals, you know, forever. And yet people still, you know, so many people treat each other miserably. Why is that? Because ideas are up here. Beliefs are up here. There has to be a transformation that goes on deeper. And the other question?
Carol, we invite you to bow in.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
I and I think several others were deeply moved by Fred's discussion during the retreat on what I would call deep, 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 deep listening.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're quite familiar with deep listening, deep sharing as a technique, but Fred took it to a new level. And I would appreciate hearing more about that, or hearing about that again, in fact. Thank you.
Yeah, so let me just say first thing, I mean, what you said, you know, and this is the whole thing about all this love stuff, you know, all these books and all these workshops and, you know, and all these podcasts, they're all full of what? Techniques, right? And we're a technical fix society, right? Just give me a new technique, right? And so that's why I said, you know, we fill up our heads with all these techniques. Now, what technique should I be using now? And you know what I mean? It's like transformation has to go deeper than technique. Right. It has to be a transformation of our minds. Is that clear? And so so what Carol's talking about is, you know, that in our tradition, meaning the tradition that comes from Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, he's you know, he says, love is understanding. First time I heard that, I was blown away. Like, what? I thought love is a warm, fuzzy feeling, you know? Isn't that love? Love is understanding. When you understand someone, you accept them for who they are. And when you accept another human being for who they are and give and generate that to them, they know they're loved. Love is not a thing, right? Love is something that's lived. So how do you understand another human being? You know, I mean, you can guess all kinds of things about what's going on with them, right? You can project all kinds of things that are going on with them. But if you really want to understand who they are, you have to be willing to get to know them. How do you get to know a human being? You listen to them. You know? But what does that mean then in terms of a deeper thing? It means we want to know, you know, many of us don't even really know the people we live with. You know, because we don't really understand them. To understand a human being is to understand all their causes and conditions, right? You know, this is why you can love your enemy. Because when you take a word enemy away and you just see that as a human being and you understand that that human being is only the product of their causes and conditions. And if I went through the same causes and conditions, I'd be just like them. See, that's understanding. Right? So to listen deeply to another human being is to listen under the surface, to listen to them reveal who they are. You know, so we don't talk them out of their stuff. We don't interpret. We don't judge. We don't do all the things we do when somebody is talking. We don't even interrupt. We listen deeply. Because whatever they're saying, even if we disagree with it, even if that's not the way we see things or view things, or we have a totally different way of looking at the situation or whatever, they're telling us who they are in that moment. And so the deeper we listen to what's underneath with an interest and a curiosity, and a desire to keep unpacking it. Tell me more. I want to know you. Right? And what happened before then? And what was that like for you? And what is it like for you right now? You see? What's going on with you right now? What are you feeling right now? That's deeper than the surface. But to practice deep listening, you have to be totally open. You have to have no agenda. You have to be totally accepting and create an environment where the person can say whatever they want. And not make it about yourself. Because as soon as they're saying something that you don't want them to be saying, or they rather they didn't say, we're now imposing ourself. We're making it about me. To listen deeply means no agenda, total open. It's like you're just giving somebody the floor, and I'm just here to learn about you. And that interaction is always fresh. Because all of us are endlessly in process, and who we are today may not be who we are last week, and what's coming up now is not coming up what was coming up a month ago. And so, so listening deeply, Thich Nhat Hanh says, that's the way we love. That's the way we can love our enemies. When we see, they're just a product of their causes and conditions. If I can get into them, if I can see what has created their life, their fears, their angers, their suffering, why they see things the way they do, why they're needy for this, why they're needy. Yeah, I want to understand you. I don't want to talk you out of it. I don't want to judge you. And wouldn't it be wonderful if the other person had the same interest in us? That we had a relationship with other human beings. I mean, it doesn't have to be our intimate partner. It could be family and friends and children, where we learn, I want to know you for who you are. Deep listening, wonderful practice that we do. And it's a skill, something we learn, we become better at over time. So good. So this brings our Sunday Sangha talk to an end. It also is the final talk for the retreat. We spent time early this morning talking with retreatants about future practice, going back into their daily life. It's all about implementation, implementation, implementation. Very conscious. So good. Thank you, everyone.